Good evening, everyone, and welcome to this Scrutiny, Health and Wellbeing Committee on the 15th of July 2024. And a warm welcome to Ruth Shaw and Paul Edmondson-Jones of the ICB. Thank you for being here. And members of the public. Can I receive any apologies for absence, please?
Thank you, Chair. We've received apologies from Councillor Beach and Councillor Holton.
Thank you. Number two, declarations of interest. Do any councillors have any declarations of interest to declare on the items under the discussion at this evening's meeting? Councillor Peters?
I'm not really sure where to fix the agenda tonight, but I am a governor at UHDB, just for the record.
Thank you. And Councillor Walker?
Just for the record, I am a patient at Gordon Street Surgery.
Thank you. Item three, then, to consider any urgent business brought forward to the meeting under Rule 12. I'm not aware of any urgent business for consideration at the meeting. So that's item number four, then, Gordon Street Surgery. Ruth and Paul have made themselves available today. Thank you for that. You guys have been invited to this evening's meeting to discuss Gordon Street Surgery. Are there any questions from councillors? Councillor Walker.
I will have some questions, but I'd like to hear first what you guys have got to say and update us on. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Councillor Walker. Are you okay to respond?
Yeah. Is that on? Yeah. Chair, do you want us just to go through just a little bit of the background, just so that we're absolutely clear what the background is and what we're talking about? And then I think we had a number of pre-sort of asked questions and so on that we can run through, but would that be helpful just to go through?
That would be helpful, thank you.
What we do. So if I do the first bit and then you do the communication. Sure. So just to run through, and excuse me just reading some notes, but it's just so that we make sure we've got it absolutely right. If it helps for the minutes afterwards, we can provide the notes for you and so on if that helps. But basically, just to run through very quickly. So Gordon Street practice has been rated inadequate or requires improvement by CQC since 2017. It had had five inspections in total, and the most recent one was rated inadequate again. So that's going back over a period of 5-6 years. We've had ongoing performance and quality issues since 2017, and we've put a considerable amount of support into the practice. We've got a GP support team that goes in and supports practices that are struggling. We've put in practice nurse facilitators to help with childhood immunisations, and we had to do a lot of work to support the practice during the COVID vaccinations. There have been some very poor patient satisfaction results over the last 4 or 5 years, and for the last 4 years, the practice has been in the bottom 0.2% of the whole of the country, so right down at the bottom in terms of overall experience. And it was actually rated the lowest in the whole of the country in 2022. We saw a slight improvement in 2023, but then we've just got the results for January to March 2024, which shows another drop again, and Ruth can go into some of that in a minute or two about some of that. 7th of February this year, we gave notice to the practice, to the contract holders, that we were going to terminate the contract, we gave 3 months' notice at that point of termination. As we were going through that period of 3 months' termination, the 20th of March, so nearly 2 months after the termination, we were told that the building would not be available to us to use going forwards or to any new provider. So we had to look at that point for new premises. And that was what we did, was we secured Hill Street Clinic from the 7th of May and also Outwards House from the 20th of May. And Outwards was always the main site that we were going to work from. A huge thank you to UHDB there, the hospital. Hospital were really, really helpful, worked with us in terms of getting Outwards House ready to do that. 2nd of May, the partners formally disputed the decision to end the contract. The contract ended on the 3rd of May. So they disputed the contract just before it actually terminated on the 3rd of May. And then on the 7th of May, the new practice opened with East Staffordshire Primary Care Partnership, commencing delivery of services. Again, got to highlight, just as we did for UHDB in terms of the premises, the work that was done by the caretaker, by local GPs, local staff, etc., to get everything ready in time in a new premises, ready to start on the 7th of May. And this is obviously a temporary solution until we get a longer-term solution. I'm going to pause so you get a slight change in voice. So, Ruth, do you want to do the communication engagement that we've done?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's been a huge amount of comms and engagement work that's gone into this. And I'm just going to briefly run through them. Some of you will be aware of this because some of you I recognise faces of, and we've spoken before about this. So there have been a series of letters to patients letting them know, updates as we went along. We attended a PPG meeting, we've engaged with the community champion. We did attend one of the patient, I say we, Paul attended one of the patient protests, yeah. Didn't you?
Yeah.
And engaged with some of the patients that were outside. We've got a patient FAQ document online, which is a live document, so as and when we're picking up any questions that are coming in via the website, via emails, on any social media or through the practice, we're regularly updating that FAQ document so that people can see those updates. We've done a walkthrough video with the caretaker provider to kind of show patients what the new building looks like, how they can access it, that kind of thing. We've done several stakeholder briefings, which I think you've probably all received. Attendance at town councillor meetings. We met with the former MP, Kate, attended a health watch meeting and also engaged with the community leaders as well. Something that we did pick up through the communications work that we were doing was that there is a large population of patients at the practice who do not speak English or English isn't their first language. So we engaged with the community champion who advised us on that Urdu is the most commonly spoken language among that population. And we developed targeted letter translated into Urdu with an FAQ and also a video being spoken by an Urdu speaking GP who supported us with trying to get that message out, so that try and kind of get rid of any confusion or messages that might not have been reaching some of the patients. So that's a very quick overview of the comms that we've done, but I can provide you with a detailed list of exactly what and when if that'd be helpful.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be helpful, thank you very much, that'd be good. So would you like to continue, or
do you want us to go on and talk about the experience that we've had over the last sort of couple of months with the caretaker there?
Yes.
And some of the
yeah,
feedback that we've
good.
Had, which I think was one of the questions that you'd asked anyway. If I run through that, if we start with the patient feedback, is that all right if we start with that? Because I think that's been quite positive. What the caretaker are doing is to give everyone who's attending the practice the opportunity to feedback. And they do that through the family and friends test, which is something that we use extensively around the NHS. And that's following their appointments and so on. We can then put the results together on a monthly basis. And the caretaker's then reviewing them to have a look and see, well, what's the feedback we're getting? How can we improve? What is it that we might do? So in June, we had 144 patients who provided that feedback. 91% of those responses rated the service as good or very good. So really quite stark change from what we had in January to March in the old patient satisfaction survey, where we really had quite poor outcomes there. So 91% rated it good or very good. We did have 2%, so 8 patients who for various reasons rated it poor or very poor, and each of those has been specifically looked at by the caretaker and worked through to say, what was it? Was it an isolated case? What led up to it? How can we actually improve that? What these results showed particularly was the patients were impressed with how easy it was to book an appointment. They could get through on the phone quickly, and then they were receiving an appointment within the next week. Number of comments about staff being friendly and welcoming, which is really, really important, because these are the sorts of key areas that previously we were getting the patient dissatisfaction around in terms of the ability to ring up, etc. So we're busy looking at the national patient safety results that patient survey results that came out for January to March. But those show that, as I said, we had a bit of a lift in 2023 and then a drop back down again into the bottom 0.2% in those early months. So it's not everybody who's going through, but it's 144 patients who've gone through during June, and that's giving us a feel as to how well things are going, where we can make improvements, what we can do.
Thank you. Okay. Has anyone got any questions on the panel? Councillor Peters.
Thank you. And thank you for that brief. It was very informative. I've got a note in my book that you were set out to look for a long-term solution. Just snatch that word out, long-term solution. But there wasn't a time scale against that. Now, by framing that question in the context of patient care and patients having assurance, what is your plan? What are the demonstrable milestones on your recovery programme?
So the arrangement that's in place now, it's a caretaker arrangement, and it's specifically for scenarios like this where a new provider needs to come in and take and caretake those services. When we would normally procure a new service, it takes a period of several months, even up to a year sometimes, to procure a new provider for a practice. So what we really, really wanted to do was ensure that whoever was caretaking this practice was were local. So we wanted a local solution, and that's why the East Staffs Partnership have been a really, really good, have been really good at stepping up and kind of filling that gap to continue to provide services to those patients and to try and improve their experience while they're looking after the contract. At the moment, Paul mentioned earlier that we are in a dispute process with the caretaker, so we cannot secure that long-term solution until we've allowed that dispute process to come to an end. Once that has concluded, then we would look to secure a longer-term provider for the practice, but that would be looking at all the different available providers, people who are wanting to provide the service. There's very, very strict rules around procurements and providers of primary care medical services. So at the moment, we can't give you those definitive timescales because we're not sure at what point the dispute process will end. If the dispute process is continues on over several months, the caretaker provider will remain in place. But what we do know is that long-term solution won't be a quick fix. So the caretaker was very, very short notice. The long-term solution will need to work through over a period of several months.
Yeah. Is it just worth saying that in terms of the dispute process, there are two potential stages to the dispute process. One is a local one, one is a national one. We're going through the local dispute process at the moment, and the panel hearing is set for August, I think, isn't it?
I think
it's August that it's set for now, where there will be a local panel, which is chaired by somebody who's independent, who will look at that. Once that determines local decision, there is then the opportunity for either the partners or the ICB to appeal the decision, if they either of them wish to do so. And that's then to NHS resolutions, which can take anywhere up to 18 to 24 months to go through. It is not the fastest process once it gets to a national process. I hope it won't go there. I hope it will resolve at a local level, because I think that's what we would all want. But if it does go to national dispute, then it could take a, as I say, up to about 18 months to see that through. But this is what Ruth's saying at the moment. We just don't know what that end point is at this stage.
Thank you. Carry on, Councillor Peters.
Can I just say one final question? With child immunisation within all of that, we know we have a measles problem at the moment and all those sorts of things. Are you still able to deliver child immunisation clinics as usual?
I can answer that. So, in terms of the practice, they have several performance indicators and things that they need to do. Childhood immunisations are one of those. I can say that the performance around childhood immunisations is already better than we've seen previously.
Yep. Councillor Smith.
Just wanted to pick up on the measles, the vaccinations. I work at a community centre and we've got a drop-in for that, so I think they're being rolled around the community in different venues for the vaccinations. Yeah.
Thank you for that, Councillor Smith. Councillor Wildman.
Thank you, Chair. Just a few questions, really. The dispute with the people that used to run it, who pays for all this? Is it the NHS? Is it, who actually is going to pay for, as you say, was it 24 months, I think, did you say, or 18 months that they can go, this process is going to go on, or could go on? Hopefully, fingers crossed, it won't, but it could. Where does this come from? And if they're successful, then where are we? And, because this is a temporary solution. You just said that earlier, I believe. I'm just wondering what, where that situation is.
So there's kind of two parts to it. So there's our role in that, which is funded by the ICB, and then the previous partners who have chosen to take on the dispute will be funding that side of things themselves. What I will say, and I'd like to make this really, really clear, is that when the decision was taken to terminate this contract, which is a really, really unusual decision for us to take. We never normally get to this point. The risk of dispute was highlighted and the potential cost of that, and it was absolutely paramount that the potential cost of a dispute did not outweigh the need to improve the quality of services that patients were receiving. So that was a risk that was acknowledged at the time and that we've taken on.
Okay, you've probably answered this question as well, but it's just a normal question, really, but what went wrong with the old regime, and what is happening to make it that you're doing now to make it better? Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, yes. Absolutely. And for a GP practice to receive an inadequate rating or an requires improvement rating, it's not that unusual. It does happen to practices. Practices have issues. They get into trouble. Generally, what we see is if there's a poor rating or if they're in trouble, we then see an upward trajectory and the practices really work to improve things. They work with us, they work with CQC, they work with patients, and generally the practices who have had an inadequate rating, you can be pretty sure that they'll be outstanding over the next few years as a result of the work that they've put in. What was unusual about this situation is that it was the practice failed to demonstrate any improvements or sustain any improvements over a period of time, and that ultimately sits with the partners as their responsibility.
So this came from the patients that they were unhappy with the situation. Where did it come from that this was got so bad, really, quite frankly?
I guess there's a number of factors, isn't there? Because there's CQC do their inspections. So they go in and they do their inspections. We're completely independent of us, nothing to do with us at all. They go in and they look at certain criteria. And you can go on the website and you can see all of the things that they looked at, and it spells out exactly what they found and why they rated them as inadequate or requires improvement each time. We obviously work on an ongoing basis with all of our practices around the contracts that they've got, and we work with them on, as Bruce said, their performance indicators, the KPIs that they've got to achieve and so on, and we monitor all of that. But the other sort of important factor alongside CQC was the patient satisfaction survey. To be in the bottom 0.2% of the country, that sort of 10,500 practices, I think, across the country, significant number, to be right down there. And as Ruth says, to be there sustained year after year after year after year, the patients who were going on to do that survey were sending a very clear message as to what they thought of the service that they got. So I guess it's triangulating those three things: our own work on the contract, CQC, and then the patient satisfaction surveys are sort of key ways of looking and looking at a practice.
Okay, and your new area on Outwards House, wasn't it, did you say? What was it? 144 patients have done the feedback, is that right? Or was right, whether I wrote it down.
Yeah.
Since, what would you, assuming that, hopefully, fingers crossed, that it all goes well, how many patients were in, you know, on the Gordon Street site, how many patients filled the actual forms out and so on? Were they all online as well? Or how did they do it?
I'm not sure of the exact numbers. I don't have them off the top of my head. If you can go online and find patient survey results. Generally, and this is across the board, not specific to Gordon Street, generally patient satisfaction results are quite few. Lots of patients will receive the request to fill
so
in
it's
patient
random,
satisfaction.
Actually.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's random, and a lot of patients don't. But what we do have is consistently across all of our practices a similar level of uptake of that patient satisfaction survey. So whilst the amount of respondents tends to be quite low, it's a good benchmark because you're benchmarking across other. And also as well, one of the other benchmarks we use is that the particular demographics of Gordon Street surgery patients, it's quite a challenging population. We've got some very similar practices, particularly in North Staffordshire up in Stoke, who have the same kind of makeup of demographics, if you like. So we like to be fair, to compare apples with apples, if you like. We're not going to compare the results of patients at Gordon Street surgery with a practice in the middle of Lichfield, for example, because you're not comparing like for like.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you both. Thank you very much.
Anyone else? Councillor Walker.
Hi, thank you. Nice to see you again. Couple of things from me, really. Some of the other councillors have touched on some of my questions, but the longer-term plan, obviously this devastated the local community who walked to the surgery and are now having to find transport modes that they've never had to do before. Thinking of the long-term plan, if things do go completely pear-shaped, where are we going to hold, you know, the GP surgery in the future? Because it's a very densely populated area, very dense buildings, and there isn't, you know, a site really for building a new, brand new, shiny GP surgery. So that's one. And then how many patients do you know have relocated to other surgeries since the closure of Gordon Street?
Yeah, so I'll work backwards. So in terms of the new the patients relocating, we are aware that 25 patients did relocate to another practice nearby. That was before the end of the contract termination, so that was when they heard the news. Concerns were raised by that practice because they were worried about the stability of services for their own patients. So we have supported them to carry out. It's a temporary list closure, which basically kind of restricts patients from registering at a practice if they've already got a local GP. That doesn't mean that somebody without a GP can't register with them. In terms of the other local practices, we've been in contact with them regularly. Laura in our team particularly touches base with those practices on a regular basis, and they haven't raised any concerns in terms of an influx of patient numbers at all. So there was a little one kind of in March, well, around April, but that seems to have plateaued. And I think that something that's having a real impact on that is the access to the practice. So we can see a marked difference from the previous provider to the new provider in terms of waiting times, being able to get through on the phone, ease of getting an appointment. So word spreads. And so we do think that that's having an impact as well. And that's why patients have settled a little bit and aren't necessarily looking to move. There was another part to your question.
I tried to move and they said, oh, no, you can't come from Gordon Street.
Please stay.
Thank you.
Premises.
That disruption,
yes. Yeah, absolutely. So obviously when the decision was taken to terminate this contract, again, the estate was highlighted, it could be a risk. We were very, very much hoping that that building would remain available for us to continue to rent and have GP services provided from there, because it's a purpose-built GP practice. It's currently now sitting empty, not doing anything at all. So we were really, really hoping that it would be available to use. It wasn't. We've got a team of estates specialists who absolutely came together to try and find a solution. The solution was found with UHDB. And long term, we will find a solution. We're not closed off to any conversations about that building. Long term, should that building be made available in the future, absolutely, we would want to talk to the owners of the building because we just want what's the best for the patients. But whatever happens, we will absolutely ensure that there is a building available for those patients. When we looked at the options around this contract, one of the options discussed was, well, it's called a list dispersal when you close a practice and the patients go and move to other practices. That absolutely was not an option because we know that Gordon Street patients need their own surgery. The other practices around it can't take those patients, so that's what we'll absolutely do, whatever that solution looks like. Okay.
Councillor Legg.
Thank you, and thank you for the update. I'd like to ask about the patients you've sent to Stapenhill, Hill Street Medical Centre. I had complaints that they aren't getting an appointment, they're not being listened to. These people already feel quite let down by the trauma that they're facing at the minute without not being able to get an appointment to see a GP. Could you tell me what is the working week for the doctor or the nurse or whatever they are at Hill Street Medical Centre that you're sending the Gordon Street patients to see?
So I couldn't tell you what the working week is of the staff providing the services from there, but what I do know is that when a patient contacts the practice, the receptionist will speak to the patient in terms of what a suitable location might be for them. Outwoods is the main site, but there is also Hill Street available too. There's also some really great work that's been done in the community, actually. So a local pharmacy that's very, very close to the original Gordon Street building, they actually came forward and offered some consulting rooms in the pharmacy so that if there are patients who can't get to the new buildings, so that's potentially an option as well. But I think in terms of the working hours, I'd say I'm guessing it's probably a flexible model and based on the patient demands and where the patients are wanting to be seen.
So there's no information I can find online or you can give me to reassure these patients that are complaining they're not answering the phone, they're not getting to see any sort of GP?
So is it, are you saying it's patients that are phoning Stapen Hill and they can't?
Yeah.
So the Gordon Street number is exactly the same phone number, and it goes through to the central kind of call team who are answering the calls. We are monitoring the call rates, and the rates that calls are being answered, they're being answered much quicker than they were previously, and that's one of the reasons why the caretaker provider is sending out the friends and family test to try and get some of that feedback so that we can hear from patients and make any tweaks.
So if you're monitoring the phone calls, then how many people are actually getting to see a doctor? Can you tell me that, please?
I can tell you it's more than the previous provider.
Yep.
Confidently.
Where do I find the information then on the website from the previous provider? Because it is very scant and vague.
GP practices don't, you wouldn't really be able to find the shift patterns of any staff for any GP practice. But the practice is open Monday to Friday, normal hours.
And what do you call normal hours, please?
8 till 6:30.
Yes.
8 a.m. till 6:30.
Yes. So they can start ringing at 8 o'clock?
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Till 6:30
now. Thank you.
Just to say that if you are aware of individuals who are unable to either get through or to make an appointment, because we're not hearing that at all.
No.
So, and through the family, a friend and family's test, that's not feedback we're getting. What we're getting is feedback that actually it's quite easy to get through, and it's easy to get an appointment within a week with a GP, well, at the practice. So if you've got specific examples, it'd be really useful to pass them through to us.
Right,
would that be through
that's
the...
fine.
We can absolutely...
Yeah,
we can
then
that.
Follow up, because it'd be useful to know times of day, is it a particular day of the week, is it a particular time, and so on. And we'll follow that through.
Definitely.
As to why we can't do that.
And I'd also really encourage them to feedback as well to the caretaker as well, because they're really, really keen.
Yeah.
Okay, on Councillor Legge.
Please, Chair, could I ask one more question? The feedback you're asking for, do you advertise you wanting feedback either when the people make the appointment or when they come out of seeing the doctor?
Yes, so it's not us specifically, it's the provider that's obtaining that feedback, but as far as I'm aware, all patients get an opportunity to provide feedback either in reception, via a form, and they're also getting text messages with a link.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Any other questions? Councillor Walker?
Sorry, one that I forgot to ask you. Bear with me. I had a couple of complaints from patients just while we're talking about patients' complaints about the car park. There's quite a walk up the hill, and somebody with not registered disabled but not able to walk very well had real trouble, and they were worrying about the winter time and everything, you know, getting into the surgery. So that's one. The other one was, I meant to ask you about the staff. Did they all get tupied over, and all the reception staff and the other staff there along the way?
Yes, so any staff that were employed by Gordon Street were tupied over if they wanted to. Obviously, they can't be forced to go and work for somebody new, but they were all provided with that opportunity, and I'm aware that there are several staff working for the new provider. In terms of the car park, it's not ideal. We're not going to pretend that this building is as good as the old Gordon Street building, but what we couldn't do was allow a building to, as I said before, we can't allow a building to prevent us from improving the services for patients. What the team at the practice are doing is trying to obtain from information from patients around their mobility issues and try and accommodate them and support them if they need to. And if that be walking down to the car park, then that's what they'll do. But absolutely, I'm not going to pretend it's not perfect.
One of the ladies suggested maybe a handrail might help.
That
might be something to have a look at, you know, as a student. I've not seen it myself, so I can't comment, but yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Walker. Any other questions, Councillor Wilman?
That's just sparked a question, thank you. The staff are going to be, or some of them, are now working at the new building. Just explain to me, what was identified, why the issue was the fact that Gordon Street Surgery wasn't. Was it anything to do with the staff? Was it anything to do with the regime originally? And are those staff, if it was, are those staff being retrained?
So ultimately, the responsibility for the contract is held by the contract holders, and in this case, there were four GP partners who held that contract. They are responsible for ensuring the right culture is in the practice, that staff are trained, that they understand their roles and responsibilities. They are ultimately responsible. It's those four part GP partners that the contract has been taken away from. So the staff employed by the practice had the opportunity to chupi over, and I am aware of training that's actually taking place with some of those individuals, but the GP partners themselves who held that contract are not working at the new practice. They, as they are not employees and it was their business, they are not entitled to chupi.
Okay. Councillor Legg.
Thank you. Just reading the report from the CQC, I noticed there is quite a few amendments in staff training and staff records. Has that been rectified, please?
In terms of the CQC found issues with the previous provider and their staff records?
Yeah.
There
were missing safeguarding references, an awareness training.
Yes, that's been referenced. That's been rectified for all the staff.
Thank you. Any more from councillors? I would like to ask a few questions, if I may. So the CQC rated Gordon Street Surgery inadequate. Now, the first thing is, will the CQC be in this new, be part of this new caretaker arrangement?
Will they be reviewing
going forward the same arrangements as it was in Gordon Street Surgery?
The CQC have a responsibility to inspect all GP practices. Obviously, there's a lot of GP practices. Sometimes there can be a few years between a CQC inspection. I wouldn't be able to tell you whether the CQC are going to do an inspection with this provider, but what I can share is that we've been working really, really closely with the CQC, so we share a lot of information with them. From what I understand, they're quite assured that some action's been taken, and we are feeding information into them. But whether or not they'll undertake an inspection during the time that the caretaker is providing services, I wouldn't be able to tell you.
Yeah, because I'm just thinking how so the CQC rated it inadequate, along with that, with the patient survey, that was grounds to then say, okay, it's a risk worth taking to shut down that part and do this new arrangement. But if we're not actually comparing, you know, apples with apples, like how can you know, like we're going in the actual right direction?
So we probably at the moment, the provider of Gordon Street Surgery is probably the provider that we have the closest contact with. If not daily calls, I think there's weekly meetings in with the provider. The caretaker provider aren't just a company that have come in to try and take over services. They are a group of local GPs, practice managers, nurses who have watched this over a period of several years and feel very, very passionately about changing the reputation of this practice, turning services around for patients, and that's why we wanted them to provide those services.
Absolutely, and I don't dispute their intention, but how do we get to a point where we can say, okay, well, this was the information before that rated inadequate. What new information do we now have that rates it adequate, getting better, improving, apart from the patient survey?
So the CQC is one indicator. So it's one, as Paul mentioned, that there's lots of information that we triangulate. We don't just go after a practice that's rated inadequate. We support them and try to help them get better, and that's what normally happens. There are several indicators within the GP contract. So, for example, we have quality indicators. So these are really specific measures around how practice is performing, and that's based on their quality outcomes. So it's cervical screening rates, immunisations, childhood IMS, A&E attendances. There are, if you saw the Excel spreadsheet, there are lines and lines and lines of indicators, and we monitor practices based on those indicators, so we will absolutely be able to see an improvement or not based on those indicators.
Thank you. Follow-up question to that is that these indicators. So are we still, so Gordon Street, you know, there's the Hill Street part and the Albert Street part, they're both still encapsulated under the Gordon Street Surgery brand?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And last question for me, you'll be happy to see what, is that I wish if you could come back to this meeting maybe in like 6 months and seeing how things hopefully are going in the right direction and giving another update, that'd be lovely.
And I think just to say, Chair, at that point, we should be able to bring back some of those quality indicators and so on. We should be able to demonstrate we raised childhood immunisations, for instance, and we should be able to bring some of that back and actually show the changes that have happened.
That'd be good.
Yep.
Lovely. I appreciate you two coming in and giving a report to us. I understand that someone needs to catch a train. Isn't it?
As
you. I mean, yeah. So that's the item number four done. So you're more than welcome to stay if you wish, or you're more than welcome to leave. It's no problem at all. Thank you for your time here.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah.
And anyone who's in the audience who wishes to leave, but you're also more than welcome to stay as well. Okay, so item number five, questions from the public. We have not received any questions from the public. Item number six, questions from members of the committee. We have not received questions from the members of the committee. And item number seven, public minutes of the previous meeting. I propose the approval of the public minutes from the previous meeting. Do I have a seconder for the minutes? Councillor Smith, we'll now go to the vote. All those in favour, you raise your hand. So you've got four. Any against? Any abstentions? Two abstentions. Thank you. And the vote is carried. So I think, there's item number nine. This is an update from the community selectmen's basis manager, but he's just letting those people out, so we'll wait until he returns. Oh, okay. That's a good idea. Item eight. So we'll now take nominations for the appointment of the vice chairman of the issuing year. Do I have any nominations? Don't all shout at once. I was going to nominate Councillor Holton again. Over the previous year, she's been vice chair, to just carry on with her. Do I have an seconder? Councillor Legg? All those in favour? She's going to love me. Any against that? Any abstentions? You're sure you don't want it, Alison? motion is carried. It's Councillor Holton, so she might not like me anymore. But yeah, that's problems for another day. Item number nine, a scrutiny review programme update. I now invite the Communities and Open Spaces Manager to provide that update. Over to you, Mike.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of both of the reviews, they'll start with the suicide rates review. The subgroup have met with a number of different providers, either from the public sector or third sector providers. There are five actually in total that we met with, and give a really comprehensive picture of the provision that's available within East Staffordshire. We're now going to move on to writing a report. From the information that we've got, we know that East Staffordshire, in the last three-year cycle, which is 2020 to 2023, features highly for suicide rates, which the County Council colleagues are tackling as part of a suicide prevention strategy, which is a wider document that they're delivering. But we've heard from those different providers, and there's different pressures that our communities are experiencing that are leading to either suicide rates or poor mental health. But we'll start to tease that out in the final report so members can get an understanding of some of the recommendations that we'll be making as a committee. Onto the exercise provision. Report has been completed and finalised. I had sign off this morning from FMU, so that report is now ready to go and can be shared. Councillor Peters and the Chair have been leading on the review for that. Impressed with the services that everyone active are providing for young people with gym and leisure facilities for that 12 to 18 cohort. One of the recommendations we'd like to make as a result of that is that we have a regular update from everyone active so they're able to update us on the health of their communities and what they're delivering for people within East Staffordshire.
No.
Oh, okay, Dick. I'll move on then. Item number 10, the quarter four performance report 23-24. Now invite the communities and open space manager to provide an update on the quarter four performance.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just give you a very quick overview of the indicators. So 132 indicators. Of those, 122 were green, 2 were amber, and 6 are red status, 2 have been previously deleted. 130 live targets, 93.85% are green, 1.5% for amber, 4.62% are red. Happy to take any questions. Clearly, I won't know the details of all of those performance indicators, but I can take them back to the development manager, head of service.
Are there any questions on the performance report? All happy? Good stuff. Thank you, Councillor Lake. Item number 11, the Staffordshire County Council Health and Care Overview and Scrutiny Committee update. I now invite Councillor Lake to provide an update.
Councillor Legg's got to apologise because Councillor Legg didn't turn up for it because she had licensing training the same day. So I do apologise, but I have now got the calendar and I will be attending the next one on the 29th of July.
Thank you. Councillor Legg. Are there any questions to Councillor Legg? No. Okay. Item number 12. A list of public executive decisions have been circulated with the agenda. Does anyone have any questions about these? No. Carry on. Okay, so the date of the next meeting is the 7th of October 2024, which we need to confirm. So just confirm the date and the next meeting will be on 7th of October 2024. Okay. Right, so we now have three items to consider in private, so we'll now move that in accordance with Section 100A, Part 4 of the Local Government Act 1972, the press and the public shall be excluded from the remainder of the meeting, as it's likely, in view of the nature of the business to be transacted or the nature of the proceedings, that there will be disclosed, there would be disclosed exempt information as defined in the paragraphs of Part 1 of Schedule 12A of the Act indicated in brackets before each item number on the agenda. Do we have a seconder for going to private? Councillor Legg. All those in favour going to private? And unanimous. Thank you. Okay. So, do you need to turn the... Yeah.